everyone. My talk today, boundary layer, wind and turbulence features from offshore LIDAR measurements. I want to acknowledge my co-authors. Bob Bonta is here, and Aditya also here. He's very active to ask questions, and he has very nice poster also. Very quick introduction. We need to develop faster development of offshore wind energy, and there is a lack of data at turbine rotor heights, like Alexandra already explained everything. Emerging LIDAR technologies, fixed platform-based commercial scanning LIDARs, or buoy-based LIDARs is promising future, but they still in a kind of testing phase, and we don't have funds to do long-term measurements. But meanwhile, at NOAA, we have about 3 decades of experience using our high-resolution Doppler LIDAR to do measurements offshore in different parts of U.S. coast and also in the world. So those measurements were done a long time ago, but they're precious, so we decided to use them and reanalyze them for our own purposes. During all experiments, offshore experiments, LIDAR was installed in C-Tainer along with computers and provided measurements from a deck of, a research ship shown here. And GPS-based motion compensating system allowed to obtain very accurate measurements even under rough sea conditions. This plot show measurements of radial velocity in a LIDAR conical scan mode. And to perform each scan, it requires about 2 minutes. So those scans performed under shallow elevations, and we took several of them during a certain period of time, like 15 minutes, and using velocity azimuth display technique, we compute profiles of wind speed and wind direction with resolution, vertical resolution 10 meters and time resolution 15 meters. So we repeat this along ship track, and this bottom plot show you time height cross-section along ship track, actually wind profiles. So recently at NAVIA conference, one of the manager from Department of Energy, Joe Klein, he provided top 10 list of atmospheric phenomena that mostly impact renewable energy. And the first on this list was low-level jet. So it's very important for wind energy. Why it's important? It's a very well-known phenomena over a great in a wind flow over great plains. And we use LIDARs to study low-level jet, and we discovered that low-level jet mostly happened within rotor layer. And why it's important for wind energy? Because it's additional source of wind energy. But meanwhile, it creates also huge shear through the rotor layer and shear-generated turbulence. And this turbulence, like shown here, below low-level jet maximum, could create additional loads on the turbine parts and even damage turbine. That's why low-level jet is important. So research questions that we try to answer using offshore measurements. Could low-level jet be observed offshore? What is the frequency of those jets? How are they strong, and what the height of jets? So is the how big shear through the rotor layer? And also, we try to understand how accurate hub height winds computed by extrapolation from surface measurements. So we also checked difference in power estimates based on hub height winds and versus to rotor equivalent winds. And also we were curious how the wind flow different in the cold waters and warm waters. So that's why we analyzed 2 data sets, one during New England air quality study that was conducted in 2004 in the Gulf of Maine. And another one, Texas Air Quality Study in 2006 in the Gulf of Mexico. So plenty of 15 minutes profiles were analyzed, and in each map, each red point actually represents 15 minute profile of wind speed or wind direction. And those embedded maps show the in better resolution of those dense areas of measurements. So this plot illustrates wind flow conditions for one day in during NEAC's experiment, August 11, when ship track was going like shown in this map. So this time height cross sections show wind scale from 0 to 15 meters per second up to 500 meters. And you can see that plenty of strong winds were observed, plenty of low-level jets, and some of them were within rotor layer, shown here by two horizontal lines. And bottom plot show wind profiles for this period, just taking for every second hour. And low-level jets indicated here by low-level jet height and wind speed indicated here by red points. And you can see they could be strong like here or not strong, low or higher, but low-level jet presence. So analyzing all profiles from NEAC's experiment, we found that 72% of wind profiles actually show jet structure. And this distribution of maximum jet speed with mean value about 9 meters per second, it's much higher than predicted by NREL, 8.2 annual wind speed. And what interesting, low-level jet distribution show mean value 156. It means like all jets, most of the jets were located just above rotor layer, creating shear through this layer. But we also observed very interesting situation like shown here for July 31st, when plenty of strong jets with 25 meters per second were observed at close to the hub height. And in such conditions, estimate of wind power based just on hub height winds only could provide significant errors compared to the equivalent wind speed. Those plots show a time series of wind at three different height, and this is shear of wind speed. Black line is shear through the whole rotor layer and in the top and bottom parts of this layer, and indicating the stronger shear was happened during nighttime hours compared to daytime hours. Wind directional shear did not show any trend, and it's kind of random fluctuations, and it's not very big, and we concluded that during NEAC's experiment, directional shear was not significant. We also find a shear between winds measured near surface at 10 meters and hub height winds. And they not similarly vary in a time, like shown here, or in space. It means that if you will use simple power law or simple shear pro relations to extrapolate near surface winds to hub height, we will have errors. But how big those errors could be? So we just checked it. And this animation show wind profiles computer measured by LIDAR, it's in the black, and computed using two shear exponent, 0.1 and 0.7. And reference wind, we took also LIDAR measurements at 10 meters. And you see that in a rotor layer or up to 500 meters, there is a huge, huge differences between computed and measured winds. And it's for August 11 when we observed plenty of low-level jets. This plot show mean bias at 100 meters also between measured winds and computed using two shear exponent. And those biases in wind speed provide greater biases in the wind power. And here are some numbers. Mean bias for the whole experiment was 0.23 megawatts. It's probably not big, but if you will multiply by number of turbines in a small wind farm, like 100 turbines, and also multiply by number of months in a year, you can do some math and have some uncertainty in dollar amount. And for extreme situation like August 11, of course, bias is very much higher. So we also try to understand what, or figure out what the shear exponent could be from real measurements. And we did it for whole experiment, and it showed distribution of shear exponent for whole 15-minute profiles. And you see it's distributed from 0 almost till 0.5. And it's also spatially distributed. But mean value shown in the bottom plot, this is of a diurnal variation, showed that shear exponent is greater for nighttime and smaller for daytime. So when you don't have any measurements and trying to use those shear profiles to extrapolate, please consider that shear could be different for different diurnal periods. So we used a subset of NIEX data set in 2013 during the experiment sponsored by Department of Energy. We call it Prediction of Offshore Wind Energy Resources. And we have poster there, it's number 45, talking about the results. But here I just want to show that during this experiment, we actually used LiDAR data to validate several models listed here. It's NOAA weather prediction model, NOAA and SEP weather prediction models. And when our profiles show normal wind profile shape, relations, very model did very nice job, and we have very nice relations. But during low-level jet events, you can see discrepancies very quite significant. So there's a weakest link for those models, so the models need a better parameterization of low-level jets. Now, let's take a look on the measurements in the Gulf of Mexico. This is different because it's warmer waters, and also we have, in addition to offshore measurements, we have plenty of measurements in, I call it, closed areas, in a ship channel and also in a bay area and in different places. And we're very curious how those measurements differ from their open ocean measurements. And I will talk about this a couple of minutes later. This is a wind speed variability during the whole experiment, shown up to 1 kilometers for whole days. And it just showed that in a hub height, in a rotor layer, winds were very, very low compared to NIEX experiment. And we observed plenty of jets also, but they were in the higher elevation at 600, 800 or higher. This is different from NIEX data set. So, and here's an example of diurnal evolution of wind flow in the open ocean, shown in the bottom, and in a channel channel and bay areas, shown in top. And we observed in the closed areas, we observed very interesting flow structure, and that we never observed on a flat terrain or in an open ocean during the NIEX experiment. And we think this is a very influence of the inland flow that provides such interesting structure. What else we discovered? That in the closed areas, like shown here for August 27, it's closed area, and compared to the open area measurements in August 29, we have different wind conditions, and stronger winds were observed in the closed areas with a greater shear through the night hours, like shown here for three different heights through the rotor layer and also close to the surface at 15 meters. But we did not see any shear in all profiles or all those time series when we just analyze measurements in the open ocean. When we selected data only in open ocean and plot those distribution of wind speed for whole hours or daytime and nighttime, it showed that wind speed very low and just above the cut in wind speed. And here's a show wind shear through the rotor layer or directional shear through the rotor layer, very small. And also shear exponent doesn't show any general variability, but and it's a much smaller, 0.35 compared to mean value in the Gulf of Maine, 0.16. So, and also, as I said, we tried to check if there is difference in wind power estimates using hub height winds or rotor equivalent wind speed. And the the term of rotor equivalent wind speed was came from DTU, and first I saw it in a Wagner paper in 2009, and she was counting for their shear through the rotor layer, so she proposed to use weighted wind speed through the rotor layer. Aditya, in 2015 paper, proposed to use more complicated equation, accounting for turbulence and also for wind direction shear and directional fluctuations. So we tried to both techniques, and here's results of normalized bias between hub height wind shown like pH and also one technique and another technique. And both techniques did not show difference between them, both techniques to compute equivalent wind speed, but they show some difference with power estimates based on the hub height, and we find it could be up to 1 or 1.5%. And bottom plot just show RMSE between hub height winds estimates and power estimates on based on hub height winds and also equivalent rotor equivalent winds. And mean 51 kilowatt is big or not, we can compute also multiplying by several turbines and several months. So I won't just show one picture that we don't have wind turbines yet offshore, but we can observe wake, like downwind of oil platform or other obstacles, ship itself in an open ocean. And those wakes, like shown here in this example, could extend up to 1.3 kilometers with 4 meters per second velocity deficit, and it's kind of promising that we can use LiDAR measurements to estimate wakes when we will have offshore turbines. And here's my final remarks, that winds were stronger in the colder waters of the East Coast, and we observed there are plenty of low-level jet events, and shear was about 3 meters at every 10 meters. Over warmer waters of the Texas coast, winds were slightly stronger in the Channel Bay areas compared to winds in the open oceans, and we observed there are also low-level jets, but at very high elevations. So extrapolation of near-surface winds to hub height by power-law relations may produce significant errors. And also we compared two techniques for calculating rotor layer wind, and we tested it for NEX 04 data, showing about 1.5% less power compared to power estimates based just on hub height winds only. Yeah. Of course I have.
I started one.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by your profiles that you have shown and diurnal profiles.
Okay.
And in many cases the what is that 0 hour coming here is very different from the let's say 12 hour, 24 hour and 0 hour. You expect that they will be sort of symmetric, almost reaching the same level. In most cases, they are. But in some cases, like August 19, I think, or August 29,
I did not get question. What the profiles? This one?
No, not this.
This one?
What I'm trying to figure out is that in these profiles, you go from 0 hour to 23:45, which is like almost the same time. But in some in this case, for example, the 23:45 profile is very different from the 0 hour profile.
It's just time scale here, 24, but last profile was 23:45.
Correct. That's like 24 hour.
Yes.
So which is like 0 hour on this side. So I had, is that right? Or I would have expected that they will be very similar. And in most of the cases, your profiles are, am I right or I'm missing something in that? I mean, the 0 hour is these days.
If there's a next, it's 23:45 is the last profile.
Correct.
Next will be 0 hour for the next
right.
day.
Right, so, yeah. So what
you,
I was.
I understand, you're talking that those profiles starting, this profile for 23:45 for August 11th will be similar to zero for August 12th.
I would have expected so,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's coming very different in the lower diagram, which is at 23:45, you have the huge kink at the middle, and whereas in the first one, you have that red mark at the bottom of that.
It's every
of course, of course. I understand that, but
they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be. You're talking that this profile should be similar to this profile,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
No,
okay.
Because this profile is end of day 10.
Right.
It should be
course,
similar
of course,
to 24 day 10.
Okay.
This one, last one, should be similar to
the
first
0 8 hour of
yes.
the next day.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So that
is the 24 hours between them. Sure. So 23:45 minutes. We use Andreas' criteria, and he published this paper probably somewhere in 1998. So, and there is a we did automatic technique that go through all profiles and find the point where wind speed decrease below and above for certain amount of meters per second. Yes, yes. And especially we observed very interesting structure during the Texas measurements where we, I don't have this, I eliminated this, when we have two or three low-level jets. But in the Bob Bonta paper, it's 2003, we agreed. There is plenty of different, you know, people understand low-level jets. Some of them think jet happens above a kilometer, also a low-level jet. We agreed. For wind energy, we're just interested in low-level jet that happens below 500 meters because it's the most important that creates shear through the rotor layer. And if there is a second jet or whatever, it doesn't create shear through the rotor layer, so we are not interested. Maybe it's good for different application, but not for us.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.